Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live as usual for a half hour with an open phone line for you to call if you have questions about the Bible or the Christian faith that you'd like to bring up for conversation. If you have a different view from that of the host and want to bring that up for conversation, that's fine also. We'd be glad to have you call today. The number to call if you'd like to be on the program is 800-227-5278. That number again is 800-227-5278. And I want to just say for the sake of those of our listeners who live in or near Temecula, we typically try to have a meeting once a month in Temecula, but it's been more than a couple months because of my travels. We're picking that schedule back up again this Saturday. Our meeting that is usually scheduled for monthly, but it's been more than a month since last time. It'll be, again, being held in Temecula. I'm still going through the series, What Are We to Make of Israel? And this week we're going to be talking about the covenant that God made with David and the question, is this covenant fulfilled or has it got to be fulfilled in the future? And there are, of course, two schools of thought about that. We'll look at both of them. That's this Saturday night, talking about the Davidic covenant and also the New Covenant. And so this is part of our series, What Are We to Make of Israel? I hope you may be able to join us. That's in Temecula. We hold this gathering at the Love of Christ Christian Fellowship, which is near the corner of Winchester and, is it Winchester? Yeah, Winchester and Inez in Temecula. There's a map at our website. The meeting is held at 6:30, where we encourage you to join us this Saturday night. Information can be found, a map to the place can be found at our website, thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. Go to the tab that says announcements and you'll then see where it is that we're having our meeting this Saturday night in Temecula and you can plan to join us. I hope you will. Let's talk to Keith from Lake Forest, California, first of all today. Keith, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, Steve. This is a little follow-up on Friday. We spoke about the definition of faith.
Okay.
You cited the scripture that defines faith as substance of things hoped for, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I should have stayed on and said to you is that that same scripture is found probably at least three places in the revealed scriptures, the Latter-day revealed scriptures, including the Book of Mormon. And I've read that thing since I was old enough to read, and I still don't understand. I bet that if you had 100 people read that, one out of the 100 might be able to explain it. And I appreciate your comments in doing so.
Thank you.
I personally have developed my own definition of faith, but I think that's not something I want to substitute for the Lord's definition. So I just want to leave it at that.
Okay, and that's what you called for today?
Yeah, that's what I called for.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Keith.
Okay.
Have a good week.
Yeah, you too. Hope you keep doing the good.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. I had hit the button and you began to speak some more. I didn't mean to hang up in the middle of your sentence. My apologies. I don't want to be rude. We're going to speak next to Janine, calling from King City, Oregon. There's a line open for you if you'd like to call, 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. Janine, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve. Hi. I hope you had a good fourth.
Thank you. Well, I did. By the way, are you calling from King City, Oregon or King City, California?
Oregon. It's up
okay.
In the Portland area.
Okay, great.
Okay. I am calling about a relative of mine. It's a 53-year-old niece who is into the New Age type of thing, and it's just, you know, real complicated and et cetera. But the bottom line is that she has gotten herself to the point that she's blown all of her money and says that she's not capable of work, so she's turning to the family members to try to get support for her. And I'm wondering, what is the Christian response to somebody that is completely done it to themselves and not being able to support themselves.
Let me ask you this. Why does she say she's not able to work now?
Oh, she claims that she's had some injuries that's left her kind of disabled from the work that she had been doing before. And I'm sure it's partially true, but I don't know if it's fully true. She has been applying for disability insurance, but they're turning her down for it.
Well, it seems to me that there's many disabilities that a person might have that prevent them from doing the work they did before, but which would not prevent them from doing some other kind of work, maybe something more menial or that just pays less than what they're accustomed to. But I'll tell you, if I would sooner go look for any kind of job myself than ask relatives to support me to do nothing.
Another factor in this is that she's been bipolar all her life, and she's, for the last 8 months, been in what would be called the manic phase, and she feels like she's empowered, and she talks about the spirits taking over, empowering her, and she likes the way she feels and doesn't want to change, and I'm sure that would keep her from being able to get a lot of jobs.
I'm sure it would. I know someone who was in that very state of mind at one time and couldn't hold a job for more than a few days because of it. I would just say it doesn't sound like she's your responsibility, and I guess therefore it would be a matter of you deciding how much you believe in her inability to find any kind of work, how much you sympathize with her situation, how much you feel that you should underwrite her future lifestyle, and as it were, expunge the results of whatever it is she's done previously. You say she's gotten herself into financial trouble in the past. I would not volunteer to support her unless I felt strongly that God was saying, okay, do something for this lady because it'll be it'll open some communication with her or something. But it doesn't sound to me like, it doesn't sound to me like she's got a strong case to be asking her family to support her. But then again, I don't know the nature of her disabilities. On the other hand, what would she be doing with her time if someone was supporting her?
That's right. Yeah, I don't know.
There's lots of jobs you can do from home.
That's right. Okay, well, that, you pretty much answered my question for me. I just wanted to hear your opinion on this because the family's been discussing it. People have supported her, but she just keeps coming back and wanting more. So everybody's pulling away from her. Plus, she's very abrasive and attacks people verbally if they don't give her money. So,
her attitude, her choices, and so forth are obviously something that you don't want to reward.
Right.
You don't want to give her the impression that this is the way to manipulate people. This is the way to get from people what you want. I mean, she needs to learn some humility. I mean, if somebody's coming to you asking for your support, I would expect they should come with a great deal of humility, saying, you don't owe me anything. And, I realize that this is a situation where I'd do anything if I didn't have to ask for help. But if she's not having that kind of an attitude, it doesn't seem to me like she's got an attitude you want to reward by underwriting it.
Okay. That is pretty much the conclusion I've come to. And praying about it, I have fully come to the feeling that any kind of support is just enabling her to continue on with the way she is going now.
Well, but not knowing any more than I do, I would agree with you. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Okay, Janine, thank you for your call. All right, our next caller is Tom, calling from Torrance, California. We have a line open still, but not very much time left. If you want to call, 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. Tom, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hey, Steve. This is sort of the same thing about giving money, and I just don't know if you have ever heard about this, but I was hoping you could address it and maybe give some teaching, counseling about it. Last week I was listening to the Catholic radio station, and they were talking about Protestant denominations. They have a way of getting money where you you give the money, and then if you don't get something spiritual in return, within 90 days, you get your money back. And this particular Catholic guy was putting it out there that it was one thing he agreed with the Protestants. It might be a creative way of getting money for, you know, and he was talking about, you know, building a new, you know, rec center and whatnot. And I just thought, you know, maybe you could pass that along, is because I think I know where you would say and how I would feel about it. But maybe there's a lot of people that are just kind of don't know, you know, that maybe that's not quite the right way. Or do you agree with that or whatever? So that's it.
Well, okay. I'm not really sure what it is you're asking me to pass along. But the, I mean, there are indeed Protestant churches that have done ridiculous and wrong things in their attempts to manipulate people to give them money. Of course, the Catholic Church has not been free from this in their history either. Selling indulgences comes to mind. That's what caused the Reformation. It was because the Catholic Church was selling indulgences, which meant that if a Catholic person would give some money to the priest and to the church, that they would help one of their loved ones who's in purgatory get out of purgatory more quickly, or possibly even buy an indulgence to be able to sin themselves without having to spend more time in purgatory. I mean, certainly there's hard to imagine a less ethical way to get money than that. I don't believe the Roman Catholic Church sells indulgences anymore. I haven't kept up on that, but the Catholic Church is not alone in doing crazy things to make money. Protestant churches sometimes do it too. Now, if a church is saying, listen, give some money to our church, and if something doesn't happen, if a blessing doesn't occur, you know, happen in your life within 90 days, we will give you your money back. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's like a sort of an interest-free loan to the church then, which could become a gift. I don't suppose that's unethical, but I don't really see that as a biblical way to persuade people to give. Jesus said, give expecting nothing in return in Luke chapter 6. So for me to say, okay, I'm going to give this to you, but if I don't get a blessing that's worth more than what I gave, I'm expecting you to give it back to me. I don't know. That doesn't really it doesn't sound like it follows any particular biblical ethic or biblical truth. It is not necessarily an evil thing to say to someone, listen, I'll, if you'd lend me some money, I can pay you back, you know, 90 days from now. Unless, of course, something happens in the meantime where you decide you don't want me to give it back to you. You know, I mean, if something happens that you say, well, no, keep the money. That kind of sounds like what they are saying, but they're not saying it that way. If they're saying, lend us money and we'll repay you in 90 days, unless you get so blessed that you decide you don't want to be repaid. I think that's what they're suggesting, but they're not using those terms. Now, on the other hand, if they're not saying in 90 days we'll give you back the money, if they're saying in 90 days God will somehow get your money back to you, then of course they're making promises that they can't stand behind, because you can't tell people what God's going to give to anyone else. So I don't really know what that church is that the Catholic radio station, I don't, you know, what they're referring to. I'm not sure what they're doing. It could be very strange. It does seem strange to me. I mean, for a church to try to get people to give on that basis. On the other hand, if the church is needing, or they think they need money, and they say, listen, we're looking for a loan from someone within the church. We don't want to go to a bank and pay interest and so forth. We just soon, is there anyone here who can spare some money for 90 days? We think we can pay you back. That'd be different. I still wouldn't feel very good about a church doing that, because it seems to me like if a church's projects are pleasing to the Lord, then the Lord will provide for them. That's what I believe about Christian finances. I believe that if you're doing what the Lord wants you to do, then the Lord will provide for it. You shouldn't have to go and ask people for a loan. At least I don't think so. I realize that lots of churches get loans to build their structures, their buildings and so forth, and pave their parking lots. But on the other hand, you hear of a lot of churches that build their buildings over a period of a year or so and never, you know, they never borrow money. They just do it as the money comes in. That is, as the Lord provides, they consider the Lord as, you know, supporting their project. And I'd have a lot more sympathy with that particular attitude than the one where people would actually borrow money to advance the church's programs. But I'm not saying the church can't borrow money, then, or that's wrong. But on the other hand, I'm not really sure what this particular church is suggesting. Are they saying, we'd like to borrow the money for 90 days? If you decide you don't want it back, that's great. We won't pay you back, but if you want it back, we'll give it back to you. It's a strange thing to do. I mean, in a sense, that'd be a little bit like what you might do with a friend if you're going to borrow money. But I don't think that's how a church should finance its programs. At least, no church has to answer to me about things like this, but you're asking my thoughts about it. My reaction would be that way.
Okay, right. Yeah, thank you.
All right, Tom, I appreciate your call. All right, we only have a few minutes left, and no callers are waiting, so if you want to get through, you can probably get on and have the last word here. Oh, there is a call coming through, but we may be able to take more than one. The number to call is 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. You're listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg. Richard from San Diego, you are next. Welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Steve. I want to talk more about what the guy was talking about before, about people asking for money. And my church has done the same thing, and I'll get up there after I, you know, speak my thing. What the churches are asking these guys to do is to trust in God, and God's going to bless you. And they're saying, if you don't get your blessing or anything, we're going to be willing to give your money back. But they're doing it based on the fact that they think that you're going to be blessed by tithing and doing what you're supposed to do. I don't happen to agree with it, but I've seen churches doing this, right, doing that type of thing. And I'll take your response off the air. Thanks again, Steve.
Okay, Richard, thanks for your call. Okay, well then it's kind of what I was thinking. The church is saying, you know, we will pay you back if you decide that it wasn't worth it to you to give it to us. On the other hand, like I said, in Luke chapter 6, Jesus said you should give and lend expecting nothing in return. So I would suggest that if someone is going to give money to the church, they should do it because they believe in what the church is doing. They believe in what that money is going to be spent for. And they should release it to the Lord because they're giving to God. They're not lending to an organization. They're giving to God for a project that they believe God supports and they want to be part of that support. If you don't believe that the church is doing something that, you know, that the Lord stands behind, then I wouldn't give to it or lend to it myself. So I don't know. It's just a kind of a, I guess this is something some churches are doing now. It's not the strangest thing churches have done. I mean, it's actually one of the less strange things churches have done. And by the way, the church cannot promise you that if you give, that you'll get a particular financial blessing back. But there are, you know, statements in the scripture that suggest that God, you know, is generous toward the generous. I mean, you can't say, well, you give me a dollar and God will give you back $100. You can't do that on a biblical basis, I don't think. But you can say, if you're generous in general in your stewardship, that God will continue to be generous toward you and provide your needs. I believe the Bible would support that idea, but it's more of a general idea than a specific one. Like, you give this money and within 90 days you'll get something back. I wouldn't agree with that. Casey from Hacienda Heights, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling. No Casey there. How about here? Casey?
Yep.
Hi, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You want to turn your radio down? Turn your radio off because you're hearing a delayed radio signal, and I'm live on the phone. Yeah.
Radio is off.
Okay.
I'm just calling. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just happen to be driving and listening to this program, and I just wanted to maybe comment on what Tom was asking, or at least the issue that he brought up, because okay. I'm actually on vacation here from Boston, Massachusetts, but I've heard of churches that will do that. But it's not necessarily asking for money or to borrow for money, but it's more of church leadership knowing that God is faithful when his children tithe. And so it's challenging members to tithe. So it's saying, hey, look, we know that God is faithful, and you may have an issue trying to tithe. So you know what? We'll give you sort of a no strings attached. Try God and see if he will be faithful to his word. So we'll say 90 days. If you don't see God be faithful to you, then by all means, we'll give you your money back. But we're also so confident that God will do what he says he will do. And so that's not even necessarily a risk for the church to take.
I see.
So it's not necessarily borrowing or anything like that, but it's saying, look, you know what? We know that God is faithful in tithing, and if you're not sure, we'll give you 90 days to do that. No risk to you. We'll give you your money back if you're not satisfied with that, but we also know that God will satisfy.
Okay, so I guess that clarifies one thing, and that
take
is
care
that, of that. All right, so there, it's a way of sort of shepherding along the carnal members of the church who don't believe God when he says that give and it will be given unto you, and blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, and so forth, and seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. There's many promises in the Bible that state that if your finances, which are really God's, because you don't own anything, God owns them all, you are stewarding God's things. But the Bible makes very clear that if you're a generous steward, helping the poor, helping support the gospel, and so forth, that you will find that God is generous back to you. Now, perhaps they are thinking, since they're using the word tithe, they're thinking of Malachi chapter 3, where it says, bring all the tithes in the storehouse and test me with this, God says. See if I don't open to you the windows of heaven. Well, I believe that tithing is an Old Testament concept, not a New Testament concept, but I do believe that giving and stewarding is definitely a Christian obligation, and I believe the same thing would apply. You can test God with this, in a sense. If you feel that God is leading you to give something, or to someone, to a church or whatever, to the poor, but you're not sure you can afford it, but you feel like God is leading you to do it, then I would say you can go ahead and do that, because God is, you know, God's going to take care of things. God is faithful. But lots of church people have never found that out. I'm not sure what it is about that that makes it hard for them to find out, because it's so obviously true. I mean, I've discovered that to be true from my youth, and it certainly is true that if you give to the poor, if you give to the kingdom of God, God supplies all your needs. And the pastors of the churches may know that, and maybe some of the people in their church are just really that immature that they don't know that. So perhaps this is a way of shepherding them along to say, okay, listen, God made certain promises. I'll stand behind those promises, although God himself will too. But you don't know, you can't see God. You can see me. So why don't you test God about this? Hopefully you will find that you don't need to trust me in the future about this. You can trust God himself. But I'll sort of put a safety net under it for 90 days so that you can discover by your own experiment that God does fulfill his promises, that if you do steward your material goods properly, that God will meet all your needs. Now, I could see that philosophy behind that. I still don't believe I would encourage that particular approach, but I can see that, you know, pastors, if they see themselves as trying to bring along immature and carnal people in their congregation to become people who trust God, people who know God, people who take risks for God if necessary because they trust his promises, then they might just provide, as you mentioned, this kind of a safety net for them to encourage the people to discover for themselves how much God can be trusted. So I can maybe be a little more sympathetic toward that approach, though I don't think I would ever particularly feel led to use that approach. But that's me. I'm not them, and they aren't me. They don't have to be me. Okay, let's talk to Mary from Spring Valley. Mary, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm Mary, and I'm calling from Spring Valley. And my question is, I was reading in the genealogy of Joseph this morning, and it states that Jacob is the son of Joseph, but I also know that Jacob is in the Old Testament with Joseph as one of his 12 sons. So I'm just wondering, what's the explanation for that, or am I understanding it wrongly, or just what?
Well, you're looking at Matthew chapter 1, where we read the genealogy of Joseph, who is said to be the husband of Mary, of whom is born Jesus, who is called the Christ in Matthew 1:16. Now, Joseph, Mary's husband, had a father whose name was Jacob. And as you mentioned, in the Old Testament, there's another Joseph whose father's name was Jacob. That was Joseph, who went into Egypt and saved his people from famine because of the dreams he was able to interpret for the Pharaoh. And he was one of the 12 sons of Jacob, whose name was also Israel. Israel, or Jacob, had 12 sons, and one of them was Joseph. But this was like 2,000 years before the time of Christ. So obviously, if you read about another Jacob who has a son named Joseph, and that Joseph is the one who becomes the foster father of Jesus Christ, we're obviously talking about different people because there's a 2,000-year gap between them. Even the genealogy itself, you could learn of that by looking at Matthew 1:2, where it says, Abraham begot Isaac, Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Now, Judah's brothers would include Joseph, right? I mean, Judah was one of the sons of Jacob, and he had 11 brothers, one of whom was Joseph. So there's a mention here of Jacob in the Old Testament. And Joseph, though Joseph's name is not given, he's including that among the brothers of Judah. Judah was one of the 12 sons. Joseph was another of the 12 sons. This genealogy follows down through Judah's line, not Joseph's in the Old Testament. So Joseph isn't mentioned by name. But clearly, anyone who's familiar with the Old Testament story knows that Jacob's 12 sons included Joseph. So, you know, that's a given. But then you have all these other names, you know, 40-something names in the list. And at the very end of the list is there's another Jacob, and he also has a son named Joseph. So clearly there's two different Jacobs who have sons named Joseph, just as it would not be unusual to find in history two guys named John who had sons named Jim. I mean, those are very common names in our society, and Joseph and all the names of the sons of Jacob would be very common names in the, among the people of Israel. Lots of people named their children after famous people in the Old Testament. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we are live Monday through Friday doing this. We are listener-supported. If you'd like to help us pay the radio bills, that's how we stay on the air. You can write to the Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. If you want, you can also donate from the website, which is thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk again tomorrow. God bless.